This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And what a day for journalists. Spotlight wins the Best Picture Oscar at the Oscars last night. I didn't see that one coming. On this leap day, February 29th, we re-examine the leap of faith that drove U.S. policy in Libya, a leap that failed to take the country from the rule of dictator Muammar Gaddafi to a stable democracy. Instead, Libya has become the North African stronghold of ISIS. This piece of the Obama foreign policy has the clearest stamp of former Secretary of State, now candidate Hillary Clinton, on it. Here, Clinton celebrates those elections back in the summer of 2012.
After more than four decades of authoritarian rule, men and women from every corner of Libya are beginning to determine their own future, and it will be the will of the people, not the whim of a dictator.
Libya quickly unraveled, though, and later that year, a jihadist attack on the consulate in Benghazi killed the U.S. ambassador and other U.S. personnel. Fresh from an overwhelming political victory for Hillary Clinton in South Carolina over the weekend, we wondered how much of the Clinton record in Libya will be re-examined between now and Election Day. A series of articles co-authored by Scott Shane, national security reporter for our partner, The New York Times, looks at Clinton's involvement in Libya and the state of the country today. Shane is the author of Objective Troy, A Terrorist, A President, and the Rise of the Drone. Scott, is it fair to say that Secretary Clinton was the architect of this Libya policy?
I think it would be unfair to call her the architect of that policy in the sense that President Obama made all the ultimate decisions, but certainly her view that the U.S. should get involved in an international coalition to protect civilians from Gaddafi, from Colonel Gaddafi, the dictator, sort of tipped the balance. She convinced a skeptical President Obama to go against the advice of other senior advisors and, you know, join in the airstrikes that eventually would lead to Gaddafi's overthrow.
And there was even other intervention as well on the ground, although we haven't really understood what that was until now. Can you explain?
There were a number of things, but the rebel leaders say that CIA officers were on the ground assisting them, providing information on Gaddafi's troop movements and that kind of thing. And the U.S. was covertly supplying arms to the rebels as well.
And is it the case that Hillary Clinton pushed very strongly for a full-scale secret mission to have special ops on the ground?
I mean, it's certainly our understanding from talking to many officials in different parts of the government that she, you know, once she made a decision that this was a cause she wanted to support, she was, very assertive in trying to make sure the rebels won and, that the U.S. effort was successful.
There's a great quote in one of your stories, and it's attributed to an American diplomat who says, "Once the endorphins of revolution faded, then it became clear that Libya's new leaders weren't really able to unite the country." Where were these endorphins? Were they in American officials' brains or were they in Libyan brains?
I think the answer is both. I mean, in some ways, in that respect, Libya is emblematic of the entire Arab Spring, where folks will remember how much optimism there was. You had young people in, capital after capital, taking to the streets, not calling for jihad, but calling for democracy. And it was a very optimistic time. Guys like Gaddafi, with whom we had made an accommodation, but who everyone recognized as a megalomaniac and a not a good guy, seemed to be on the way out. And there was a lot of enthusiasm, both on the Libyan side and on the American side, and certainly on the part of the French and the British as well.
And you have the country trying to revert to its pre-Ottoman era borders, separated into Benghazi and Tripoli. You see some of the same sorts of things going on in Syria. Do you think there's a parallel in Syria, or is Libya a special case?
The ironic thing about Libya is it's a country of 6 million people. It's got lots of oil, and therefore people thought it could sort of pay for it to rebuild without Western help after the toppling of Gaddafi. And there's no Sunni-Shia split. So if there were ever, a lot of people, American experts really thought that if there was a country where this might not be such a rocky process, Libya would be it. Syria is much larger, much more complicated, in a very, you know, complex neighborhood in the middle of the Middle East. And, you know, there are certainly some parallels, but in many ways, Syria is much more difficult, I think, than Libya.
In the statements of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and now candidate Hillary Clinton, do you see a vision of a foreign policy that would deal with the current problems in Libya?
Well, in her defense, we were told that she did want to do more. You know, part of this was we would overthrow Gaddafi, and then I think President Obama in particular thought the Europeans, for whom this was sort of their neighborhood and who had been the, you know, sort of leading the charge against Gaddafi in the first place, that they would take over and help the Libyans rebuild. As it turned out, you know, the French and British sort of got distracted, and the U.S. didn't offer a whole lot of help or was not able to offer any effective help. And the Libyans themselves were sort of riding a wave of nationalism and telling outsiders, you know, we got this, we don't need your help. You know, in many of these kinds of situations, you have an outside peacekeeping force to provide stability and security while the country gets its act together. That didn't happen. And so as a result, things fell apart. The consequences have been pretty dire, not just for Libyans, but also for much of the rest of the world, in the sense that there's been a huge flow of weapons out of Libya, where Gaddafi had stashed millions and millions of weapons over the years, into neighboring countries and as far away as Sinai and Nigeria. So those have fueled terrorist groups and conflicts in other places. A huge human smuggling trade emerged in the chaos, which fed into the refugee crisis, with people, as listeners will remember, you know, passing through Libya, getting into boats and getting out on the Mediterranean, where many of them drowned. And within Libya, of course, there's been this terrible civil war, and that has given rise to havens for militant groups, notably ISIS. And ISIS now has its largest sort of outpost outside of Syria and Iraq on the Libyan coast.
Scott Shane is national security reporter for our partner, the New York Times. He's the author of Objective Troy, A Terrorist, A President, and the Rise of the Drone. Scott, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.